have police photographing our license plates.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Hello and welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and I have a wonderful new guest I have not spoken to before, Arianna Bernstein, who's a co-producer, co-writer, and the star of Delusions of Guinevere. How are you, Arianna?
Hi, Marcello. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm terrific, and it's great to talk to you. I've seen the film. I definitely don't want to give away the ending. And I've talked with your co-producer and the writer and the director of the film, Joanna Bowser. But it's a great pleasure to get the opportunity to speak with the star of the movie. Have you done other movies to begin with?
This is my first feature that I've acted in. However, I have produced and written other films as well. So I've done a lot of theater in my day. So this is my first feature film as an actor.
You know, I love that I made the transition, as I discussed with Joanna, I made the transition from theater to film and then television and soap operas primarily. So I'm glad to hear that you've done that same thing. I think theater is such a tremendous preparation, but the basics, I feel, are the same. And when you have a foundation of theater, well, you just get great film performances, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, it's good to hear that, you know, we're kind of on the same page with that. And I definitely agree. There's a basic skill set that you have to have that you can apply to either medium. However, you have to kind of figure out a way to hone it in a different way.
Yes.
And so while I think the craft overall is very similar, there's a lot of very specific work that you have to do to make it believable for each medium.
Yes. And how about the old cliche question? How was it to be a co-producer, co-writer, and then have to jump in front of the camera and pull it off? Were the different hats ever a distraction?
Yes. Well, Joanna, my producing partner and the co-writer and the director of the film, we had a system in place where we would refer to each other as screenwriter Arianna or actor Arianna, Arianna, and vice versa.
Smart.
I would know who she was talking to. Yeah. Otherwise, it would get pretty confusing when she was asking me a logistical, you know, business question, and yeah, I'm in my head as an actor.
Yes.
So we had to be very clear that, you know, we wore many hats, the both of us, and that we needed to figure out, you know, a process in a way which worked for us, and it did, you know, to be able to differentiate which one we were talking to at that particular time.
Yes, I can see the value of that. I've never liked directing myself, and of course you didn't direct yourself, so that I think is a good separation. I know some people do, and I've had to direct myself too. I seem to do it better on a video, but that's because I can rely on the team and the camera people who I know very well, and I trust that if I don't look good, they're going to let me know. But in theater, I don't like directing myself, but We're wandering off. So, Buddha...
You have a great theater voice, by the way, though.
Well, thank you very much. Perhaps we'll work together sometime. That would be fun. So, Buddha Belly Productions. I gotta love that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's pretty tongue-in-cheek. A lot of people get a kick out of it.
Yes. I'm not surprised. So, but let's talk a little about the movie. You, in the movie, are an actress who was a famous child star and called Gillet Girl.
Right.
So what happens after you grow up and you've been a child star?
So, well, we were clearly inspired by the lives of many child stars. It's kind of an amalgam of the stories that you hear day to day emerging about, you know, what happened to our favorite, you know, famous kids that we grew up with.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of the stories are pretty depressing and have a sad ending. And, you know, without going into the ending of the film, as you mentioned,
yes.
I think we really drew from, you know, what we see, what are the aspects we see of the lives of these people that, you know, we thought we knew and that we loved as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but what really happens behind the scenes, what is the psychological impact that it has on these children?
Mm.
And how does that relate and how do they function in the real world, you know, once all of that's taken away from them.
And
that was a huge inspiration for us.
I can imagine, well, not only because I've seen your performance and seen Delusions of Guinevere, but I see that in it. And of course, perhaps the most famous person to go through this was Shirley Temple. Those of us who are old enough to remember watching her movies on black and white television, and then she grew up and it just sort of faded away. But I get the impression your character was a little more dropping off the edge of a cliff. It didn't seem to that she sort of gradually got there, but the child stardom stopped, and we join her at an audition as an adult. Am I
right? Yeah, so I think that what you're referring to, I think the gradual aspect did happen with Guinevere. I just think it happens off screen.
Yes, gotcha.
Enter the story.
Okay.
So we are coming in kind of an abrupt way where, you know, she is at the bottom of the barrel looking for any break she can get because she's not, you know, she doesn't have the status she used to have.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting too as a actor trying to think about, you know, what it's like to have that status. That was always my favorite game to play in acting classes.
Where you
have the card on your head and
yes.
You know exactly what number you are, and you know, if you have a higher number you're a higher status, and you have to figure out who is the highest status and who has the lowest status.
Yes.
So that was something I definitely implemented in my preparation, and it was fascinating trying to figure out, you know, the psychology of somebody who was so high status at the beginning of their life, and that is over, because usually we think about having the high status, you know, we're going to have that in the future or we
yes.
have it now, but it's not usually something that's behind us. That was really fun to play with.
I can imagine it, sadly. not that I was ever a big...
People always ask me if it's autobiographical, and I'm like, God, no.
No, please. Well, I was certainly not a big TV star, but I did have a recurring role on a couple of soap operas. And anyway, we won't go there. But I do understand the character, and I hear what you're saying. And you are, as Guinevere, surrounded by, as most of us are fortunate to be, with family and friends who knew you when. Is that fair to say?
Yes, definitely fair to say.
How difficult is that journey for Guinevere when she's making an adjustment, or maybe not making an adjustment, who knows, maybe trying to recapture? Again, I don't like giving away things, but how is that when you're sort of a public figure, then a not public figure, and your family and friends know you from that time, and whether they've moved on or not, or you've moved on or not, there is potential conflict there, yes?
Right. Yes, and that was definitely fun to play with as well, as that conflict, because, you know, it's something that the friends and family knew for sure, and Guinevere has kind of tried to forget it in their relationship, although I think part of her uses it as a bit of a you know, remember who I am kind of thing.
Yes.
But, you know, where we meet her now, you know, she's just so laser focused on her goal.
Yes.
That goal is regaining her fame.
Yes.
But unfortunately, it, you know, her friends and family aren't the focus of her, you know, life journey anymore. And that's really sad. And you see that, you know, they've loved her in spite of everything.
Yes.
With her highs, with her lows. And unfortunately, she doesn't have the same kind of understanding and commitment to the friendship as they have to her.
Yes. I, you know, one of the things I thought, I like when, I'm a guy who went to see Psycho. And
I love that.
Yeah, and in the shower scene, I hope there's nobody still out there who doesn't know what I went, oh, that's him dressed up like his mother. And of course, everyone sitting near me in the theater, I was lucky I wasn't thrown out. So I tell that story because I like it when a script pulls the rug from under me, because it doesn't happen often. And this one did, much like one of the best written things that was ever on television and film too, for that matter, and that's MASH. What I loved about the MASH writing is that one moment you are laughing and you're so convinced you're in a comedy and you know what this comedy is about, and then all of a sudden, boom, you are someplace else and you go, holy smoke, this is serious. And I hope you don't mind my describing the film that way, but did you feel that as a writer, that you wanted to rope us in and then take us down a different road?
Yes, that was definitely one of our main goals in writing it. And when we had table readings and stuff, you know, our big concern was asking our readers and our audience in those readings if we've earned our ending. Because we knew what we wanted to have happen at the end. It was just a question of, did we get there fair enough? You know, did we pull the rug out from the audience too much? Or was it gradual enough for them to not feel completely, you know, surprised and, you know, that they had no idea what to expect? So hopefully we were able to achieve the former, that we were able to, you know, go in and have it be somewhat gradual, but with still a big element of surprise.
Oh, I think you achieved all of that. I think...
thank you. That's a really big compliment, so thank you.
Absolutely, because I was watching, and like I said, I'm laughing, and I'm thinking, aha, and of course I'm taking notes because I know I'm going to talk to you two ladies, and then I'm realizing little by little, wait a minute, they're not going where I thought they were going, and this different road is the great appeal to this. As I told Joanna, I grew up loving to watch movies that were about movie making. You know, there were plenty of those in the old days. And even in my education phase of my directing theater, I would have large classes and therefore would need plays with large casts. And most of those went back to Kaufman, etc., and Moss Hart, and with big casts. And they were about, in many cases, show business, or for that matter, the play's the thing is another that I used in classes. And I love those plays about people in show business, in filmmaking, and, you know, what goes on behind the scenes. Now, this is that, but it's a whole new ball game. You have taken it to such a new level. And I don't want to say it's depressing. It isn't depressing. It's just that it's real. It's honest. And when you watch it, you begin to see, oh, are we ready for this? You begin to see the actor as a human being, which, you know, a lot of the public don't know that actors are really real people. Have you run into that, by the way? That particular aspect, and not people not being able to separate you from your profession?
Yeah, well, as I was saying before, everyone kept asking me if this is autobiographical. I mean, people that I know who are actors.
Yes.
And what I was like, there's a big disconnect here. Like, no, this is a fictional narrative screenplay.
Yes.
This is just when I was talking about it. I was like, this has nothing, I cannot be more clear in saying this has nothing to do with me.
Yes.
it is something that came out of not just my imagination, but, you know, my co-writers' imaginations as well. It's not all me. And so the fact that people kept on putting on me that, you know, it might possibly be autobiographical, I was just like, that's not. And the thing is, you know, I'm not a recognizable name or face. So, you know, when people thinking, you know, those similarities, I can imagine what people, you know, like Jennifer Lawrence, who everybody thinks they're BFFs with,
yes.
You know, they think they have a relationship, and they, you know, it's just, they think that there is something personal there.
Yes.
And I can imagine from, you know, from that perspective, how that must feel because of how it felt for me, even though it's wildly different.
Yes.
You know, just the facts that people thought things were personal, and they thought they knew personal things about you by knowing what material you worked on.
Yes.
that was definitely my first foray into kind of understanding the melding worlds of personal and professional lives.
You know, without giving away anything, your character, Guinevere, is not the only child star who has now grown up and is dealing with trying to hold on or recapture or what have you. That, too, was a nice twist. It was a nice even hurdle to sort of get over. So you like that. Good. Well,
thank you.
I hate it when people, because I write, too, when people say, well, why did you write that? Well, you wrote it because it felt like it was good and right and interesting and better product and all of that. But that's it's not like it's a brand new plot line, but it's certainly, I think, in the flow of this script and what we think we're watching and then what we gradually find out we're watching, it kind of hits you in the gut, didn't you think?
Yeah, and I think that's the point of it, obviously.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there were a lot of reasons why, you know, we chose to have certain aspects of the other former child star's life end up the way we did.
Yes.
You know, one in particular is a catalyst for what Guinevere does in the future.
Yes.
It was kind of like the inciting incident for, you know, her escalation into the new sphere of stardom, of social media stardom. I think you're referring to another aspect of what happens to a different child star in the film.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And that was definitely like a tactical device that we used to show what, you know, what could happen on the other end.
Yes.
So both of the child stars, well, there's three other ones.
Yes.
Two that I think you're referring to represent the different ways and paths their lives could be.
Exactly.
And I wanted to show both examples.
Exactly. And then Guinevere takes her own path and remains to be seen how we, you know, what we think about that, because we're not going to tell.
Right.
But one thing that is interesting and understandable, Guinevere seeks out an older, shall we call him a colleague, an older colleague who was instrumental in her earlier career and tries to remake. I think there is, it's that recapturing what she had. She reaches out to people who were, or to this one person anyway, she doesn't reach out to a lot of people, friends who were there, but to this ally to help her get there. And I thought that gave it a layer of, it gave it a layer of what?
Well, I think tenderness.
Yes.
For sure.
Good.
I think, and you're referring to her former agent.
Yes.
Who, they were together. It was kind of like the golden team.
Yes.
His name is Frank. And their relationship is very tender and loving and almost, you know, fatherly.
Yes.
And he guides her. And he loved her as a child and he loved her as an adult. He wants what's best for her.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he and Guinevere have very differing views of what's best.
What's
for
best,
her.
Yes. He's like the voice of reason and nobody listens to.
Yeah. Very clever book for your own show.
Yeah.
The Reasonable Voice.
Oh, yes. I didn't even think of that. Very good. Okay. So you decide to play the Gillette card for your comeback. I mean, we all tend to grab to what's familiar because it's work, and so we want to use it again, even if life or the situation, the times have changed. You try and find that secure platform from which to launch again. But again, without giving away too much, how do we, you know what we do? We're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back with that question. I know what I want to ask you, but I don't want to give away anything when I do. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the good fortune of speaking to co-producer and co-writer and the star of Delusions of Guinevere, Arianna Bernstein. We're going to come right back and keep secrets, but share film talk. Well, stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. It's hard to say why success happens in the music industry, but there is a town located where no one would ever expect that has produced exceptional amounts of extraordinary music. Music by the likes of Aretha Franklin, Jimmy Cliff, Etta James, the Rolling Stones, Bono, and a long list of other music legends. Why here? Some say the magic that sourced these hits comes from the mystical energy emanating from a river that flows nearby. It has been known from the time of the Native Americans as the Singing River. So maybe they are right. Others claim the music's stunning colorblind successes, coming in a time when racism plotted the land, are irrevocably tied to the history of the famed studios in Muscle Shoals and the legendary producer Rick Hall. It was Hall's leadership forged by personal tragedy, a fiery temper, and a driving ambition that wrestled these elements into music that defined a generation. The documentary, Muscle Shoals, is an extraordinary walk through American music history, presented with just the right mix of local beauty, historical remembrance, and the awe of some of our greatest performers who made their own pilgrimages to this out-of-the-way Alabama backwater town and recorded their greatest hits. Muscle Shoals, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Find us on the web at IndieFilmMinute.com.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today, co-producer, co-writer, and the star of Delusions of Guinevere, Arianna Bernstein, who's on the phone with me today. We are tap dancing around some of the points of the film only because we do not want to give them away. It is a tremendous tour de force that pulls from the lives of child stars and what happens to them when they're no longer stars. So, Arianna, I always think that one thing that brings people together is food. I think that's been proven.
That is an absolute.
Yes.
Yes.
And you have this really comical and yet attention-grabbing scene.
Are you talking about when I talked to Best China Buffet?
Yes. I love that scene. I love General Chow's chicken.
That was an ad lib.
That was an ad lib?
Yeah.
I love it. Well, I loved the scene, I'll tell you.
Thank you. Yeah, I was, I have a lot of conflict within myself about what I eat and, you know, meat and all this stuff and, you know, if everything is, you know, socially responsible.
Yeah.
So I just have this weird idea of if Guinevere had that, you know, she's animal conscious and,
yes,
you know, she has a dog and everything, but I just had this weird image of her wondering about these, like, existential issues,
uh-huh,
and it relating to food and her asking about the sociological impact of naming something after a Chinese war general.
Yes.
Which is General Tso's chicken.
I may feel a little guilty for when I order it now. I don't know, but I've always loved it. But especially in New York.
It's,
I mean,
quite good.
Yes. You know, when I used to teach commercials, there was a commercial, I think it was for Fresca, and Coca-Cola owns Fresca, and I used it in class because it touched a certain genre in commercials that was emotional, that we buy on emotion, therefore we sell emotion. What was special about this Fresca commercial was that Dad used to take me to this place that was our place. And Guinevere has a place. She goes there, but they don't always seem to recognize her when she, you know, orders the usual. But also it becomes the place by Guinevere's determination, by saying it is so. She identifies it as the place of another character that she meets. And it, that relationship is one that I love because, again, it's within the script that starts us on one road and gets us on another. This relationship has all the signs of what we are used to expecting, and then it ends up being something we don't expect. Tell me about the writing of that and the playing of that and the directing of that, being directed in that scene. Not just that scene, but that relationship within the film.
Right, so you're talking about the character Guy Collier.
Yes.
Played by the incredibly talented actor Andrew Ruth.
Yes.
And so Guy and Guinevere have a relationship that throughout the film, it's almost like a typical romantic comedy kind of relationship.
Uh-huh.
But as you've mentioned many times, you don't want to give away the ending.
Yes.
So, you know, their relationship is typical, and we play it as such throughout the writing, but then and throughout the directing as well, and the mm-hmm. filming and the acting, all of that, you know, ties in together. But then, you know, there starts to be gradual shifts in their relationship where certain expectations aren't being met by the other one, and just as Guinevere has some issues with her friends and her family, and the laser focus of her career starts corrupting all of those relationships, it too starts to creep into corrupting her relationship with Guy Collier.
Yes.
But we didn't necessarily film it knowing that that's what was going to happen. We filmed it as, even though we did know.
Yes.
We filmed it as, you know, trying to have this pure, innocent, childlike relationship, because they were friends as kids and now they're grown ups, but part of their relationship is the reminiscing or the feeling of familiarity that they had with each other as
yes.
kids.
Yes, yes. And then try
child star.
And they assume that that relationship is still there, the one they had as children, although I think they assume it and act as though time has not passed at different tempi and from a different POV. Am I going too far with it? Am I overanalyzing? Because I think that adds so much to who they are, because we're always trying to figure out who are these people, and when we find out who they are, it's all the more rewarding.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely an element, you know, throughout the whole process of their relationship evolving.
As you say, Guy and Guinevere were very close as children, and now they're adults.
Right.
They meet again on the street. And they share this place that becomes their place. And they, you know, and in this day and age, sit beside one another with laptops open and doing their own thing. But there still is that connection. So the connection is still there, but it's somehow been embellished. How are they different now and yet still the same?
Well, so their status has shifted. When they were kids, Guy was in love with Guinevere.
Yes.
He, you know, we referenced him in the script as being pimply and gross.
Uh-huh.
That's an exact quote.
Yes.
And so that's changed. You know, Guinevere was the star that he was in love with, and now Guinevere is, you know, nearing 30, single, overweight, dealing with some personal, mental, or professional issues, and Guy has it a little bit more together.
Uh-huh.
So So it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic between them.
Yes.
And, you know, the issues that Guy was dealing with as an adolescent are now the issues that are plaguing Guinevere. And, you know, the high that Guinevere was riding as a child is now the high that Guy is riding as an adult. So it's really interesting. It's kind of a dichotomy.
Yes.
And seeing, you know, what works and then, you know, when they're on the same wavelength and when they're not. And while they are on the same wavelength in some regards, there is just a bit of a disconnect between the two. And it's an interesting evolution in the character's journey.
Well, see, that was exactly what I was going for. There's a flip-flop in where they are and where they are right. Psychologically, and yet the relationship is there and the disconnect is sometimes there. That was exactly what I was talking about. You nailed it.
Okay. Yeah. I was like,
what's he talking about?
Yeah. He's asking something else. I'm glad I got it right.
Did you? Well, there won't be a test afterwards, I promise. You know, one of the funny moments, and of course we do get these in a lot of movies about actors. I mean, we see them in this situation in sitcoms. When I have an actor come in and, you know, and the photo doesn't look like them, or, and I've had, just as your character says, people actually say to me, well, I can be that. I can do that. I can be taller. It's actually happened to me in auditions. And so there's a moment there when these new
give you a leg transplant for the role.
Yeah,
you get it.
Yes. There was we'll do anything to resurrect this career. Getting back to Frank, the father figure, the voice of reason, the old retired agent that loved you as a child star. He has a great line about. It's no way to be famous. That it used to be, I think the quote is, it used to be something special or it used to be something honorable. I can't remember the exact words that he uses.
That's the sentiment, yeah.
Yeah, to be.
It used to be you had a part to play or a role,
yes,
to, you know.
Yes.
Say, but now it can just be anyone talking, you know, to a camera on YouTube.
Yes.
This is in the scene when Guinevere, and that's a big generational disconnect, when
yes.
Guinevere is trying to explain to him what YouTube is.
Yes. That's a funny scene, but it's a prophetic scene, and it's a scene that not only makes us look at the different generations that I had to go through in this whole thing of all the various devices I now use. You know, I mean, there was a time when I didn't know how to text, and now I don't know how not to.
Right,
but,
yeah.
You know, and I can remember the first time someone insisted I get a computer, and it was a desktop, very much like Frank's.
Yeah.
But once you... Exactly. Once you get used to that. But I think even more, it that line means, and you guys are the ones who wrote it, but I felt it wasn't just literal. It wasn't just about there used to be a time when you got in front of a camera, you had something to contribute. But I think it goes, yeah, okay. So how much can you tell us without telling us? What does that line mean to you? I know Guinevere doesn't hear it, but how about Ariana?
Well, I think that... Oh, God. Okay. I think that there's just so much noise everywhere.
Yes.
On YouTube, on any other... You know, okay, so Vimeo is great, because Vimeo is curated, and there's beautiful content there.
Yes.
But YouTube is just so much noise, and so many people... having opinions who maybe shouldn't be expressing them, you know, broadcasting them to the world.
Uh-huh.
And it's very scary, and you can't take it back. You know, you can save everything. And so I think that it's important to kind of maybe, I don't want to say self-censor, but I just think it's important to be responsible for what you're putting out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're, you know, playing a part, as Frank says, when you have something to say or a part to play, that's structured and that's thought out. And that's the thing. I think that's the problem, is there's just not a lot of thought anymore into what people say that goes out into the ether.
Yes.
And it pollutes it, and it pollutes people's perceptions of themselves and society, and it's very dangerous in a lot of ways, and it's very scary to me.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Guinevere thrives on it, and a lot of people do.
Yes.
But Ariana, personally, like, I think it's scary, and I think people need to tone it down a notch.
sounds like Ariana has more in common with Frank than certainly Guinevere.
In that regard, yes.
Yeah.
They definitely have similarities to Guinevere as well.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Twitter and I think YouTube are great tools if used appropriately.
I think
in terms of, you know, being able to bypass the media to get a message out.
Yes.
It's really important that's there, and that's an incredible tactical way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, as I said, there's just, like, why do we need, like, 10 videos of, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's somebody lighting themselves on fire. There's, like, you know, that thing that tried to catch on, that didn't catch on, didn't quite go viral.
Yes.
Well, you know, I read about some guy in, I don't know, somewhere in the South, maybe, like, North Carolina or South Carolina. And he set himself on fire to put it on YouTube, and his mom helped.
Yeah. Oh,
she got arrested.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's the thing that I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Not the stuff that's actually important, but why are people setting themselves on fire to put it on YouTube is so far beyond my comprehension.
I understand. You know, and it's how we use the tools, of course. YouTube, for instance, is at the center, if you will, of your film, but it also is a means to get your film known. So
that's the irony.
It is, there. Exactly. So, but it's like everything. We have choices, we have means, we have methods, and what we choose to do with the tools we're given is a choice in life and free will, if you will, and some just don't use it well, and others like you and Joanna use it extremely well. So,
I hope so.
Yes, but Guinevere is still in the midst of trying to maybe what she sees as her last shot,
right.
Still trying to make those choices. And it's great to have vision. It's great to have drive, but I guess it also depends on what you're being driven toward. Or, I don't know. It's a challenge for life.
She's seduced by that world.
Yes.
She's seduced by the fact that if you know, her lighting herself on fire is cereal eating. You know, it's a lot more benign, but it's something that is just as kind of inane as why is this catching on? But that was something that we chose because it was so, like, flabbergasting to us that kind of stuff does catch on.
Yes.
Like a few years ago, it was planking, and then it was, you know, this year, obviously, it had a much better cause, but it was the ice bucket challenge, and you never know what's going to catch on.
Yes.
But it could, you know, could be as simple as cereal eating,
yes.
which it is in her case.
Yes.
But she's seduced by that world to the point where this is what she does, this is what she spends her time doing, and she gets fans off of it, and that's where she gets her kicks.
Okay, this has been grand. Let's talk about now. We're opening. That is, Delusions of Guinevere is opening. Can you give us information about the openings and where we can find it online? And tell us everything.
I'd be happy to. So we're so excited. We're gonna have our big Hollywood premiere November 14th at Arena Cinema in Hollywood.
Excellent.
And it'll be playing at Arena Cinema from November 14th through November 20th.
Yes.
And then it will be in New York City, December 5th through December 11th.
Wonderful.
And it will also be released day and date, so it'll be on all the digital platforms, iTunes, I believe Amazon Prime and Hulu Plus and MGO. Starting December 5th as well. So if you're not able to get to Los Angeles or New York City on those dates, then you can check it out in the ether, in the digital world.
That's right. Excellent. And
and also you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube of all places, and our website, which is delusionsthemovie.com, and Facebook is facebook.com/delusionsofmovie, and Twitter is delusions. It's twitter.com/delusionsofgwen, G-U-I-N.
Excellent. Well, it sounds grand. It's I want to say to everyone, I've seen it, and it's moving. It's disturbing. It's uplifting. It's insightful. And it asks us to look at the times in which we live. And also, I want to make this point, in case you haven't noticed, it was produced, directed, and written by two women, and women matter. And I love that it is the arts that opens its arms more, well, not completely. It's been a struggle, I know, for women, but we, at least there are inroads. And you and Joanna have certainly earned your way in. And I just wish you all the best. And it's been a delight talking to you.
Thank you, Marcello. It's been great talking to you. And I just have to add that we did have two additional writers. One was a male, but there were three female writers and one male writer.
Okay.
So, have to give credit where credit's due.
And the point is collaboration. Regardless, it's right. Artists working exactly. Together with equality. And that is the point I was trying to make. But thank you for including the male.
No. I didn't want to leave them out.
I got you. All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been Arianna Bernstein talking with me today on the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, wishing her and the entire team of Delusions of Guinevere all the very best, and hope you will catch it in Hollywood or New York City or on some 21st century device at your disposal. How's that?
That's perfect. And in New York, we'll be playing at Cinema Village. So.
Very good. Thank you, Arianna. Have a wonderful life. Make more movies. Bye now.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indy Film Minute. The Holocaust is undeniably one of history's greatest horrors. One of many lessons to be learned is that an incomplete attempt to wipe out a learned, artistically inclined people will spawn a million powerful stories to keep the memories alive. Nowhere in Africa is one. The Redlich family lives in privilege in pre-war Germany. Fearing the rise of the Nazi Party, Walter has fled to Africa, working as caretaker on a hardscrabble Kenyan farm, preparing a place for his family to weather the storm. He soon sends for his wife, Jettel, and daughter, Regina, cautioning them that life is hard. Bring a refrigerator and leave the fine china behind. Yet they arrive with a china-packed trunk and a fine ball gown purchased en route. This is a story of growth. Walter to a pride in himself, Jettel to an understanding and appreciation of a larger world, and Regina into a young woman with a deep love for the people and culture of Africa. Based on an autobiographical novel, the story is told through Jettel's memories, conjuring extraordinarily sensitive insights into the human condition. Nowhere in Africa, not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, here with my pets and pet peeves, hoping you'll join me in a wake-up cup of coffee. Beating the memory lane crowd. Now that turkeys shop before Black Friday, it's not surprising that some media personality shows are rushing into 2013 year-end memories before it's even Christmas Eve. Most of us know memories recapture us and replay in the twinkling of an eye, an aromatic breeze, a squeeze of the shoulder, or in the moment of that burned taste after a fire. Faster than a mouse-clicked link, you're back to that owl in the woods, first kiss, wedding day, first shared Christmas tree, or moment of silence. Memories take us back to rain on a tin roof, our car driving us the long way home, an uncle's cackle, fireplace crackling, an aunt's knowing smile, grandma's special homemade icing, barking dogs, parents independently slipping a few 20s into your palm, and there you are, back at the beginning of the roller coaster ride, inhaling all of a teenager's unknowns, smelling the sweets before tasting the bitter, the sound of the wind and the chilly feel of snow in our face, blowing hair backwards and propelling dreams forward. Imagine Utah, Colorado, and Virginia easing toward cuddling up to justice and equality for all, despite some being drag-queened forward, kicking and screaming in their red boots. When friends share memories with me, I remember who, what, and why I celebrate in life. Mostly, it's lifelong friends, Lance and Pamela, Mercedes McCambridge, or newcomers, Boomy, Bill, Daniel, and Michelle. Chance meetings on the streets of New York City, like hailing a cab for Carol Channing. A chatty stroll with Colleen Dewhurst, James Whitmore, and Tommy Toon. A gracious nod from passing Glenn Close and Tony Randall. Quite literally, running into Nathan Lane and Jack Lemmon. Jane Alexander's thank you, an answered note from Julie Harris, telephone chats with Celeste Holm, book signing with Pavarotti, supervising Juilliard students during an invited-only rehearsal of Placido Domingo's Met conducting debut, and a moment backstage at Ford's Theater with Rosalind Russell. The point is not name-dropping, or tears during Oscar night memorials, or even how much I miss Peter O'Toole, who I never met, or Mom, who I'll never forget. The point is, every moment is a memory in the making, and every one a reason for celebration, and 'tis the season every day, in every way.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.